This edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound, was first broadcast on the 20th of February 2012 on Monocle 24. Culture with Robert Bound, in association with Mercedes-Benz. Hello and welcome to the 19th edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound. This week's show is a music special featuring a full feast of delights, from a Midori House session to sociable scenesters at Toronto's Wavelength Festival. And I've been on the road too, wedging myself into my thermals to explore the crossroads where creativity and business high-five at the BILARM Nordic Music Conference in Oslo.
Other places are looking at Nordic music and try to maybe see what there is they do. Kind of like, okay, can we do something similar to that? You know, it feels like I think Nordic music is ahead.
We'll also meet Anglo-Australian group Allo Darlin, who'll let me take a peek into their romantic souls.
The crowd was just like 2,000 people came down to see us play.
Brilliant.
And we were playing at like 1 in the afternoon or something, and all the stewards were saying, we've never seen this before, like, have you guys got a really big song out, or are you really famous or something? And we were just like, no.
Plus we'll hear how a once outspoken Russian radio station it could be looking towards a slightly quieter future. And I wasn't the only person in Oslo last week. We'll be confusing our little minds with a fine, firm and fanciful minute of sound from Monocle's resident Norwegian. Plenty of reasons to sit back, relax and enjoy this week's Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. Well, there's a death metal bus full of treats to look forward to this week. I promise you will know what that means later in the show. But before I take you to the BILARM Music Festival in Oslo, we had a special Valentine visitor to Midori House last week. The Anglo-Australian band Allo Darlin popped by to drop off some roses, and we convinced them to play us a few songs too. Here's the first, Europe.
There's a question I've been meaning to ask you. How do you feel about Europe? Does it surprise you on the continent you don't feel the same? 'Cause I've been here for days and I've never felt support. And I know what I am looking for, but it feels like I've made it. And before these memories fade in, you will ask again if this is really happening. And I just want to be closer to you. And there's nothing left we need to prove. You said this is life, this is living, this is life, this is living. You haven't felt this way since 1998. Dreamed of planes that would take you away. When you were lost to them and you were still just a kid, it didn't turn out the way we expected. But I'll pick you up off the floor, because you were what I came here for. And it feels like I've made it. And before these memories fade in, you will ask again if this is really happening. And I just want to be closer to you. And there's nothing left we need to prove. You said this is life, this is living, this is life, this is living. Night.
Thank you.
Nice. That was Hello Darlin' with Europe, and we'll be hearing more from them later in the show. But now, dear listeners, to Norway, where I spent a few days last week at Oslo's Bilan, halfway between a traditional festival and a music biz networking gladhander, has become increasingly important on the record exec calendar. I went along to the event to find out more. In the early hours of Sunday morning, the last over-entertained record executives, rosy-cheeked fans and deal-celebrating bands were braving the cold on their way back to their hotel rooms. Last week was Bilam, the Nordic world's music showcase, record industry get-together and pop festival rolled into a three-day mash-up. There were seminars on the hard-nosed side of the music business, discussions on the future of formats and dozens of gigs dotted around this handsome city of snow and ice and blondes in fur. The main point of Bilam, though, to attract the leading lights and get them to be friends. Joachim Haugland is one of the festival's key programmers.
For me, it's kind of like you can invite all your friends and you can invite your friends to a big and great party, and you can also have them meet each other. And that's also that's a great thing about it. It's like, in a way, I probably don't have time to do it in a way, but it has too much to do with Small Town Supersound. But also, it's so good. But like once a year, you can invite everybody from around the world, from Tokyo to New York to LA, and you can have dinner with them and have them meet other people, and you can watch seminars and music, and it's just 3 days of good fun with all your friends.
And Bilam is friendly, but it's about business too. But how do you make it seem like it isn't?
We don't have like these halls with tables where everybody's selling something. So it's kind of not about that. It's kind of like about being inspired and go to seminars and also Q&As with people that you didn't know that you wanted to hear and then can actually inspire you. Stuff like that is important. And then you have the Nordic aspect and the Nordic music that's around as well. But I think we hit something special, I think, but it's taken time to develop it. But right now, I think we're almost there. We're trying to organize it as small and intimate and special, and make it different and make it more like personal, and not unlike Midem and Popcom, which is much too much about selling something. We try to kind of like make this as like a smaller and cooler thing.
One cool thing, other than Oslo's icy outdoors, other than the music, is that Bilam is a great place to launch new platforms, tweak business plans, and attract investment. One such online music entrepreneur is Per Einar Dybvik, CEO of Vimp, which is a bit like Spotify, and who's just received some nice new investment from Norwegian media giant Schibsted.
Bilam has always been very special to us. We launched our first Norwegian version in 2010. Last year, we announced or launched the deal we have with Canal Digital, where 700,000 households in Norway will have a Vimp as part of their TV subscription. We want to be more than a search field or just a catalog of millions of songs. That we wanted also to contribute, like the old record store guy, who could ask, who could recommend you for something else that you maybe never heard of before. And I think we're trying to use that metaphor and trying to put that into a new service.
But not everyone agrees with the way that the mostly piratical online music world works, or just plain doesn't, according to writer Robert Levine, also given a prime platform by the programmers of Bilam.
Piracy keeps you from developing a functioning market. One guy said, well, there's a lot of piracy because things don't come out at the right time. You know, by the time TV shows get to Norway, they're really old. I'm pretty sympathetic with that. Another guy says, I pirated music because I couldn't afford to buy it. And my reaction was, and I felt kind of bad saying this, so? If you don't have enough food or enough medicine, I think the government should provide for you. The Nordic countries obviously lead the world in that. You know, if you're insufficiently entertained, do you have a claim that entertainment should be made cheaper? I don't really think so.
See? And now we're going to crunch through the snow and see some of Bilam's bands, none of which would exist if you goddamn illegal downloaders had your way.
A kid afraid of everyone.
Andrea Dahle looks like a gamine pop wastrel, but she talks a good fight. I went to see her perform at the legendary Herr Nilsson venue.
I want to make a good impressions to journalists and booking people and so on. But I want to be myself, and if they don't like it, then they can go home.
And tough. Exactly, that's fighting talk. The public are obviously very important. It's good to get people dancing and tapping their feet, but I guess the industry is important. Can you choose between the two of them?
It must be the public. I don't care about the industry. I just write and play my songs for the public. I don't care about the industry. They can say what they say, but I don't care.
More typically Nordic are the sounds of Icona pop. Clever, sexy, angular electro-pop music, all high cheekbones and metronomic precision. You don't just leave a girl without a clue. Life is up to you. And the girl duo just know there's something specially musical in the water up here.
Nordic music is like everywhere you go, it's well respected, and people really are curious about it because it feels like it's so many talents.
It punches above its weight, doesn't it? A lot, right?
And so I think that other places are looking at Nordic music and try to maybe see what there is they do. And kind of like, okay, can we do something similar to that? You know, it feels like I think Nordic music is a hit.
And the beers go down well too.
It's so lovely to like meet all your friends that you were hanging out with and drinking beer like a couple of years ago, and now you're actually on a, like this summer it's going to be like a tour in...
Reunion. Hang out. We said that today, we have the weirdest work. You go to different places but you meet the same people and have beer with them at different locations.
Knut Schreiner is a bit of a Norwegian legend, lead guitarist for Turbo Negro, and now his new Nordic supergroup, Mirror Lakes.
I think it's a lot of fun, and it's really good for the Norwegian music scene and for Oslo as a city. But it's a lot of different ideas coming together. I think things like this, like South by Southwest or Eurosonic or like any like music convention, springs out from the idea that you have an underground scene where a lot of exciting things are happening, and the establishment go to these occasions to discover it, you know? But I think it's the distinction between the underground and the established music and media world that was wiped out like probably 15 or 20 years ago. And you can really move fast from being like a new, totally unknown act to be like the next sensation over the course of a few days on a thing like Bylarm.
He's right, and Norway boasts the definitive underground scene of them all. It's dark, it's hairy, it's been accused of burning down churches, and it's almost as important an export as oil. Hidden under its wings, the darkness you wish to hide. Anders Odden is a black metal pioneer, a black-clad guitarist for Satyricon, Celtic Frost and Cadaver, and a thoroughly nice chap. When he's not worshipping Satan, he's the conductor on Oslo's black metal tour bus.
My name is Anders Odden, and this bus ride was set up first time in 2008 as a result of a joke at the after party, as most Norwegian inventions are. If you are with some really drunk Norwegians later tonight, you will probably hear some crazy ideas about clever stuff they will do with their band or whatever.
The Nordic world, with its angry old gods and cold and isolation, isn't all about pure pop, after all.
If you're not anti-Christian, you're not black metal, basically. You know, that's a huge part of it. It's also... the other side of it is to develop your own identity outside the conventional religion or... It's about not fitting in, and really developing not fitting in to a higher level. Yeah, I think it's very Norwegian because it's very individualistic, anti-group.
Yeah.
So I think Norway is the perfect country for it to come from, in that sense, because it's you know, to be extreme in Norway takes you need to take it to a much higher form of extreme to oppose the society.
It's become something that it maybe was never intended to be, and it's a great Norwegian export as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the irony of it. You know, that's what I was talking about, the foreign office, Minister of Foreign Affairs, calling to say, tell me that they get so much interest from media about Norwegian black metal that they need to know more because they feel stupid.
Indeed, Norwegian embassies from Colombia to Guatemala have been inundated with dark-hearted requests from black metal fans eager to know more about its birthplace. And Bilam's embraced the blackness.
Bilam have got so much requests from international media, where is black metal at your festival? And that's what I think is cool about it, is that black metal sells itself by itself, and all the others try to cope with the fact that Norway is known for this, you know. So it's when they have seminars, why do Norway not produce pop stars like Britney Spears kind of seminars? I'm like, and to have huge success abroad, I'm like, why should we really? I mean, we're 5 million people. How can we how can 5 million people produce huge pop stars? Is that even interesting? You know, as a topic, isn't it more interesting to talk about the fact that we have something which is internationally known? It's small and niche and stuff.
It's homemade sort of thing.
Yeah, but it's home. Yeah, it's homemade. It comes from here, you know.
And that's the thing. Bilam's not like the other music conventions. Its Nordicness is its strength. Joachim Haugland certainly thinks so.
Maybe it's the weather, and also I think it's isolation, that we're kind of outside of New York and London and all those kind of places, and we work in isolation. And also I think that the people are very good at collaborating here, so they find and they inspire each other. And you can have like a guitar noise band collaborating with a disco act, and it just feels, as you say, there's like no barriers or anything, and it's easy to get hold of people. And and the city is so small, and this, and the country is so small, that everybody get in touch with each other. So the mixture of genres and all that, I don't think we don't have the spotlight on us here every day. And then we can develop stuff in isolation, which is a good thing, I think.
And it helps when the world, for a week in February at least, wants to come and visit you in your splendid isolation. You're doing just fine, Bilam. For Monocle in Oslo, I'm Robert Bam. And that was me warming myself against the open fire of pop and commerce in Oslo. For those just joining us, you're listening to Culture on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Bound. We'll hear how one of Moscow's most outspoken radio stations is now facing a shake-up after this.
Avant-garde.
Avant-garde. I want to set up something new, not copying somebody.
Basically, we just wanted to express ourselves and don't think too much about other people.
Sometimes it needs to push a boundary
to see the smoke clearing, but it's a lifetime thing, you know.
You actually have to find something to truly challenge, and that's an avant-garde.
Watch it on www.theavantgardediaries.com.
Monocle Films, the cinematic eye on the world that brings you crafted stories from affairs to business, culture to design. Plus, our weekly Monocle briefings featuring original concepts in travel and retail. Premiering this week, high-performance innovation from the biggest sporting goods trade fair in the world.
There's a real nice vibe for almost what we're calling gentleman explorer. Those people who used to go to the Arctic in just a jumper and an extra pair of socks, and that beautiful styling coming through. So, yes, a really nice heritage product.
You can find this and over 400 more films on monocle.com.
And welcome back to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24, where it's time for a look at the Russian media. In Russia, Vladimir Putin is facing the biggest, maybe even the first, challenge since he first became president 12 years ago. A mass street protest in Moscow and other cities seemed to briefly herald an opening up to dissent. But with presidential elections less than 3 weeks away, pressure has been cranked up on independent media. Peter Van Dyke reports from Moscow.
Радио «Эхо Москвы».
As Russia's TV channels, radio stations and newspapers were brought into line during Vladimir Putin's first term as president, Muscovites could always turn to Echo Moskvy, Echo of Moscow. The radio station is two-thirds owned by the state gas monopoly Gazprom, but the journalists themselves hold the other third and have always fiercely defended their independence. For years, it was the one place opposition voices could be heard. Then the protests made opposition to Putin mainstream. Tens of thousands of people directed their anger at Russia's leader, now prime minister, but expected to be restored to the presidency at March elections. At first, Russia's media seemed freer. Now that feels like a false dawn. We see the situation changing on television and in the newspapers, says political observer Dmitry Oreshkin.
In all areas, freedom of expression and criticism is being restricted, and Echo Moskvy is among the first because it is one of the most independent radio stations.
It's not just independent, but it's also the station of choice for many of the protesters.
Obviously, they have an oppositional slant.
Alexei Pankin is a media analyst. He says Echo's loyal listeners make for a good business model.
In Moscow, they have quite a affluent audience, which is rather well-to-do people over 45. Who do have a habit of listening to them.
The threat to Echo became public last week when Gazprom Media announced changes to the board of directors, including the dismissal of the two independent directors. But the signs were there a couple of weeks earlier, when Prime Minister Putin hosted a lunch for the country's top journalists.
На каком-то канале, который принадлежит государственной компании, я просто не представляю, это невозможно.
Putin and Echo Moskvy's celebrated editor-in-chief, Alexei Venediktov, sparred as they usually do at these occasional gatherings, but it turned nasty. Putin accused Echo of promoting other countries' interests over Russia's, and then it got worse. I am not offended when you pour diarrhea over me from morning till night, Putin said. The Prime Minister was visibly irritated. Venediktov says the criticism will have been understood.
If you ask me, did Putin give the order to get rid of Echo Moskvy, I would answer that no, he didn't. For one simple reason, that if he had, I wouldn't be sitting here. On the other hand, when the Prime Minister publicly criticizes the work of Echo Moskvy several times, and even more often in private, then some bureaucrats take it as a command to fetch.
Analysts say that is how the Russian media works. Editors know what can and can't be said and exercise self-censorship. Often, they err on the side of caution. Still, Alexei Pankin says the way the station is run means the editorial line is unlikely to change, at least in the short term.
They did their legal work very well, and board of directors or no board of directors, they have enough guarantees of editorial independence.
Officials right up to Putin's spokesman deny any connection between a business decision by Gazprom Media and Echo Moskvy's criticism of Putin. But the most critical television channel, Dozhd, or Rain, is now having its financing investigated by a Moscow prosecutor.
Dozhd, optimistic channel.
It's about the elections, says political analyst Oreshkin.
There is fairly systemic pressure on the media. I think it's obvious it is connected to elections, and it's obvious it's an effort to revive censorship. Not as harsh as it was during the Soviet era, but functional and necessary. Without censorship, this regime cannot exist.
For the next 2 weeks, when Russians watch the news on TV, they are sure to see one man, Putin. And it will probably be the same after the elections, too. For Monocle in Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke.
Still to come, in part two, we'll find out what's spinning on the turntable of Hello Darlin, what's been making waves at Toronto's coolest festival, and indulge in a rather funny 60-second sensation from Oslo. Ain't nothing more Nordic than that. But before that, this. Let's hear another track from Hello Darlin's special Midori House session. This is Capricornia.
Could you ever understand how you ended up here? Any friend you've ever had has disappeared. And the tug of a heartstring is the line that pulls you home. You bear witness to the ones you used to know. And I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams. I will come to you when you fall down and when the lights go out, and we'll set the world to rights when I find you under Capricornia sky. Don't you wanna be someone you've gotta let it go? If we stay here, we'll be old before we know. And the shadow of a midday sun burns beneath your feet, and the old dogs are still sleeping in the street. And I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams. I will come to you when you fall down and when the lights go out, and we'll set the world to rights when I find you under Capricornia. Ask more questions than you answer. It pulls me out and I go with the tide. And you tilt my world on its axis every time I look into your eyes. You say the things you love are the things you never have, and when you hold them, they pass through your hands like sand. Well, I have made promises to you that I could never hold. Underneath the Southern Cross, these histories fold. And I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams, and
and that was Hello Darlin performing their new single Capricornia for a special Midori House session. And I squeezed Elizabeth and the rest of the band into Studio 2 after that session to see what makes them tick. I'm now in the studio after the Midori House session with Hello Darlin, Elizabeth, Bill, Paul, Mike. Hello.
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 That's so good. That's literally quadraphonic. Mm-hmm. Except two people are sharing a mic. Thank you so much for coming in. You sounded amazing in your Midori House session. I wanted to ask you about how you met, because some of you are Australian, some of you are Londoners. Did you come over, did the Australian members amongst you come over just to form the band Hello Darling?
Bill and I are Australian. We didn't know each other in Australia, but Bill came and I was living with his sister, so he came and lived with us for a little bit. But yeah, in answer to your question, I did want to be in a band, and I did move to London because I wanted to make music.
Now we heard, and I don't know whether this will stay in, but we heard through some of your banter in between the songs, some of your chatting between the songs, introducing the songs, Elizabeth, that you're from a place called Rockhampton.
Yes.
Do you feel that you should be playing more major chords, maybe wearing a tighter jean, maybe some stonewash, employ more of a rock sound, maybe more of a rock look? Will that happen in the future?
Well, to be honest, the people in Rockhampton will probably appreciate that quite a lot, because stonewash jeans have never gone out of
fashion.
They're still the cool look, and Metallica t-shirts is still the way forward for people from Rocky.
Bill, where are you from? What's the name? Are you from Rockhampton as well?
No, I'm from Brisbane.
Okay.
South of Rockhampton.
I can't think of a rock-related joke to that. Sorry. Paul, where are you from?
I'm originally from Kent, various places, but I grew up mostly in Maidstone.
Again, see, that's stone. There's no... And Mike, help me out here.
I grew up in a place called Grafty Green.
Grafty Green?
Yep.
That's really good. Where's that?
Yeah. It's Maidstone, really.
It's Maidstone.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's about 10 miles outside Maidstone.
It's in the
Shire.
It's the Shire.
Yeah, that's why my feet are webbed and I'm very, very hairy and small.
Okay, that's nice. Mike will need no introduction. He is the drummer. I was expecting for someone to come from Megadeth. I'm from Megadeth, a small valley in South Wales.
Right, yeah.
That's what I was wanting.
So, I was born in Bleeding Skull.
I was born in the Scorpions. Yeah. It's just outside Guildford.
Yeah.
And so you met up. And how long have you been plying your trade as Hello Darling?
It's been 3 years now.
And how do you write? You're all sort of close knit. I think you're all friends, just professionally. Because two of you are sharing a mic. You're quite close there.
We're quite close.
But that's all right. That's kind of normal.
We've shared quite a bit.
All right.
Yeah, Mike and I go back quite a long way.
Too far.
Too far. Yeah.
It's getting a bit. It's getting a bit Gretna Green.
Pre-conception. Okay. We had time in the rock spirit realm together.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Man alive, this man belongs in on an Andy Votel compilation. But I wondered how you write, because you're all friends and all the rest of it. Do you jam together? Do you write fragments and send them to each other? How do you do? I'm always intrigued as to how bands sort of actually get their sound down on record and practice and things.
Well, historically, I've written a song at home, normally on the ukulele, and then I play it to the boys, and then they all write their bit.
It's quite an unusual band in some respects, I think, because a lot of the time that we go into the studio, we won't have sat and rehearsed the songs. I mean, we will have had a couple of rehearsals and done a few bits. Quite often what seems to happen is we get our producer, Simon Trout, in. You know, Elizabeth might have sent a demo of something round to the three of us, so we'll have had a listen to it, and then it will be just worked out in the studio, really. The first time we'll be jamming it a lot of the time is kind of in the studio with everyone playing in a room, and then we kind of dissect it. So it keeps it quite fresh.
So things sound different every time you play them then? You sort of bring something fresh to the table every time you play live, I presume. So you obviously don't take people's part.
Less different every time we play, doesn't it? It
becomes more cogent. It has more of a sheen of production.
Yeah, it's almost like we do things a little in reverse to some extent. I don't know, like in the studio, you know, the songs now are sort of taking on slightly different shapes live as we kind of work out how they work in a live format better than... They're two different art forms, being a recording artist and being a live performer. They're different sort of specialisms almost. And so, so the studio is one kind of bracket of things that we do with Simon and working with sounds, and then we rehearse the songs, but things change to make the best live show we
can. Mostly it's me trying to work out how to play four guitar parts at once.
Looked like you were playing a lot of guitar parts. The last song you played, when you were rhythm and lead all together, that was amazing.
But there's some intricate
fretwork there.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
love using that phrase. You get a lot of that. You must get a lot of that intricate fretwork.
No, that's the first time. I've had it.
Oh, my name's Paul. I do a lot of intimate fretwork. I'm in Hello Darling. And what about touring? You talked about the difference between touring and laying something down on record. They're two sort of different art forms. Is touring sort of becoming the lifeblood? We hear this so much of bands, whatever size they are. Are you on the road a lot?
I guess all these things are relative. But last year, we had about 3 months. Certainly 2010 was about 3 months, and maybe last year was about 2 months, which is, you know, we're a band that also has for the majority of time day jobs as well, so that's quite a lot. This year we've got a month-long tour of the States in April, going on the road next week, 2 weeks here, and then stuff all throughout the summer around Europe and maybe Australia later on in the year as well. So,
what did you look forward to playing? It sounds like you're doing some festivals this year.
Yeah.
You're obviously, when you're playing to a festival, you're not necessarily preaching to the converted, but you stand a chance of presumably kind of making a lot of new fans. What's sort of nice? Obviously, it's nice to have people singing your choruses back to you and things, but presumably it's nice to break ice with new crowds as well.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, we had a really amazing experience last year. We played at the End of the Road Festival.
Yeah.
Which we'd played the previous year, but in the small tent. And last year they put us on in the really big tent, but first on. And so we weren't expecting people there anyway. The crowd was just like 2,000 people came down to see us play.
Brilliant.
And we were playing at like 1 in the afternoon or something. And all the stewards were saying, "We've never seen this before. Like, have you guys got a really big song out, or are you really famous or something?" And we were just like, "No."
I think somebody said that like Beirut was doing a secret show or something.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was amazing. It was really, it was one of the best experiences we've ever had as a band. It was amazing.
That's fantastic. Sources close to Hello Darling deny the fact that they put out a tweet saying Radiohead were playing on stage at a suspiciously similar time. Well, of course they came to see you because it sounds absolutely amazing. It's a wonderful live sound. And I wonder where your sound came from. When I speak to bands and they remind you perhaps of something, and then I say, "Well, what do you listen to?" And they go, "Oh, mostly Megadeth, mostly Black Sabbath." And you sound like maybe they listen to something far quieter than that. I wanted to go around the table very quickly and ask which part of the band's sound you make, but what you listen to, and whether you listen to music while you're writing songs or whether you can't.
I can't really. I find it, writing songs is a very sort of personal thing for me. So I don't. At the moment, I'm listening a lot to The Clean. Nice. I know I'm very late to the whole Flying Nun thing, but they really are a great band.
I've
just been listening to them.
Bill, what's rocking the bass boat?
This is going to sound really, really terrible, but I like that song by Creation.
Oh, yeah.
Gucci Gucci.
Is that because it's got a sort of amazing bass line?
No, it's just so stupid. It's like kids' music, but I think I just like the stupidity of it.
Exactly, there's got to be a childish impulse in all creativity.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul, what can crack a smile on the face of the man that all about intricate fretwork?
Well,
do you want a sweet, by the way?
I've got one.
Listen,
got one
to this.
To go,
these are the best. These are the most awful sweets to ever eat on the radio. Do anyone like one?
Have you got
one?
Your advice and didn't put it in my mouth.
No, they're pretty bad. But anyway, while you're thinking of John Frampton, let's chew one of these.
I'd say I have to be really boring, and it's not going to be groundbreaking for any listener at all. But I've just been listening to Springsteen for the last 2 months.
Nice. Probably.
And I also got a Velvet Underground live album for Christmas, which I've been listening to.
That's nice. What sort of period of Springsteen you listen to?
I've been mainly listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town stuff and The River and the kind of bonus disc thing of like unreleased stuff that he put out, I think, a year or 2 years ago, which I've only just started listening to.
I was going to ask if you're listening to the new stuff that he's...
No. I'll get to that in about 3 or 4 years' time.
Yeah. That's the same sort of timeline as me.
It'll still sound the same.
This is good bands interviewing bands. I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
myself. It's fine.
I'm fascinated to hear what Paul's been listening to. tell me more about it, Paul. How's it been going?
Mike, behave.
Yeah,
come
sorry,
on.
All right. Yeah.
Now it's you. What have you...
I was trying to think. As soon as I heard that, I was going,
Power
come
tools.
On, penny drop. Give me something amazing that I can
it's
say.
Mainly been power tools.
Yeah, I've been doing this cafe down in Ramsgate in Kent. My girlfriend and I just moved out of London. We've got a little flat in Peckham. I'm going to give you my life story.
You're not asking a question at all, are you?
And, right, so what I wanted to say is that Sonic Youth are brilliant to... We're sort of going for a sort of slightly industrial feel on one wall, and we've been sort of painting these warm greys, which I've been chatting to Mr. Dulux about. And, I've been painting the wall that colour, and Sonic Youth has been rocking my boat, because I got one of those... I got a Sonic Youth record for...
Which one?
But for my
stop interviewing each other
for my birthday, which is Christmas.
It's that classic Sonic Youth thing that's it's called great. It's called music to decorate by.
Music to decorate by.
It's great. They love
I can't
that.
Even
they
remember what it's
that.
Called. It's got a big big white face front cover. I talk to it like a person, but it is just an inanimate object, I suppose.
The new record, I think it came out last week.
The new single is out. Came
out now.
Yes, yesterday.
Okay.
Capricornia. Yep. But that's only in Europe. It doesn't come out for another couple of weeks in the States. But the new album comes out in April.
Okay. That is Europe. Elizabeth, Bill, Paul and Mike, hello darling, thank you very much for your Midoriya House session, and thanks for sharing your, well, I shared my sweets, you shared your most intimate musical secrets. Thank you very much for
thanks,
coming
Rob.
In.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Can I have a sweet now?
And that was Hello Darling, we're talking with me last week. And their new album, Europe, will indeed be out in April. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. We're off to hear what the kids are listening to in Toronto after this.
Avant-garde.
Avant-garde.
I want to set up something new, not copying somebody.
Basically, we just wanted to express ourselves and don't think too much of other people.
Sometimes it needs to push a boundary.
To see the smoke clearing, but it's a lifetime thing, you know.
You actually have to find something to truly challenge, and that's an avant-garde.
Watch it on www.theavantgardediaries.com.
Section D is Monocle's weekly design hour. It's a show about the things that we live with. Join us as we take you on a tour of the finest furniture, buildings and fashion from around the world. From ramshackle warehouses to luxury runways, hard hat construction sites to the safety of the studio, we bring you the people and products that fill our lives.
These people find a common ground, and you know if they do that you're probably onto something that everybody in the world might be able to agree with.
Tune in each week to hear about the things that make life better. That's Section D, premiering each Tuesday at 1900 hours London time, here on Monocle 24.
And welcome back to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where we continue with the musical theme this week, to Canada. In the past decade, Toronto has been experiencing something of a musical renaissance, giving us acts as disparate as Broken Social Scene, Feist, The Hidden Cameras, Peaches and Ostra. Some of the credit for their international success should go to Wavelength, a regular curated music series at which all these musicians played some of their earliest shows. This past weekend, Wavelength marked its 12th anniversary with four nights of concerts, so we asked our correspondent, Christopher Frey, to check in on the proceedings and find out just how Wavelength is putting Toronto on the musical map.
On an unseasonably warm winter evening in Toronto, the electro-soul dancehall trio Bonjay takes the stage inside an old railway roundhouse converted into a brewery and performance space. Everyone is here to celebrate the 12th anniversary of Wavelength, the non-profit and artist-run music series where bands as different as Broken Social Scene, Caribou, Final Fantasy, and Feist got their start.
I'm Johnny Dovercourt. I'm one of the founders of Wavelength. I'm still one of the main organizers after 12 years. And Wavelength is a concert series dedicated to creating a forum for new emerging talent within Toronto. It started with a bunch of independent musicians who were all friends and played a lot of shows together at different bars around Toronto, like El Macombo and Ted's Wrecking Yard and Sneaky D's, who all loved the local scene but felt like it didn't get enough love from the rest of the city or the rest of the world. And we just wanted to do something to generate more excitement around music in Toronto.
The most recent Wavelength alumni to break out is the punk band Fucked Up, whose album David Comes to Life topped Spin Magazine's Best Of list for 2011.
My name is Damien from the band Fucked Up, and I am the lead vocalist. Wavelength to me is a night in Toronto that is one of the coolest facets of the city. It's a night that gives bands opportunities to kind of play in an established brand setting, so there's generally an audience to see them, and hopefully get exposed to, you know, or expose themselves to people. Not literally, in some cases, my case, yes, literally, but not in everyone's case, but expose themselves to a diverse sort of swath of people. I absolutely remember my very first Wavelength experience because it was one of those sort of fortunate moments of seeing like a Broken Social Scene, Feist, double bill in the Holocron days when those bands could only draw 30 people.
most often touted to follow in Fucked Up's footsteps and break out of Toronto next is Bon Jay. I asked its two founding members how Wavelength reflects the city and how it's influenced their music.
I'm Alana Stewart.
And I'm Ian Fo-Swain.
I'm the vocalist in Bon Jay.
And I'm the producer and multi-instrumentalist. I think Toronto's probably the best place in the world if you want to kind of make your own identity that doesn't have to fit in with the past necessarily. And so it probably contributes to that and reflects it as well. Both of us met and started making music outside Toronto, but it was only when we moved to Toronto that we really felt like we started to take on our own cohesive original sound. And I think that Wavelength is a big contributor to that milieu where anything's possible and no one will frown on it if you try something different and it fails, because they know it's kind of part of the process of innovation, let's say.
Yeah, they've definitely cultivated a culture of openness. So tonight we're trying out new songs, and I was talking to a friend saying, you know, it's very nerve-wracking being known for one thing, but then I came to the realization that it's Wavelength. And to that, to me, that means, you know, it's a place of security, and if you're going to F up, that's okay, because people understand, they want that energy, and they're a part of your music just as much as you are.
No other artist represents Wavelength's risk-taking ethos better than the guitarist and songwriter Sandro Perry. An alumni from its very first shows, this is Perry's eighth appearance as part of Wavelength. His latest album, Impossible Spaces, is a consummation of the various guises he's worn over the years, from electronic music, jazz, and post-rock, to folk, afrobeat, and experimental pop.
Hi, I'm Sandro Perry, a musician in Toronto, Canada. When Wavelength started, it was, I guess it was 1999, and it being a weekly series sort of created this this sense that there was a consistent place where you could go and perform or hear others perform and feel like you were part of a you know, the often used word community, and you know, feel like you were part of something where there was feedback happening and mutual encouragement. And I think that kind of environment encourages everybody to dig a little bit deeper, and more importantly, to not be afraid to fail, which is a really, really massively important thing, I think, in any kind of discipline. You have to be willing to fall on your face and just try things that are sort of in the realm of the unknown.
Future of Wavelength, organizer Johnny Dovercourt says he intends to keep the series small and grassroots, doing it for the love of staging unique musical experiences and hoping that Wavelength continues to unfold in unpredictable ways. For Monocle in Toronto, I'm Christopher Frey.
And some nice sounds from Toronto there and some controversial band names. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. Well, we're nearly at the end of the show, and that can mean only one thing. A minute of joyous and intriguing sound from some corner of the globe. Seeing as we started the show with a Nordic theme, we thought it would be nice to end with one too. Here's what happened when Monocle's resident Norwegian, Thea Urdal, went home to Oslo for the weekend.
Som lever i eksil i England, som heter Erik Ribskog.
Og det er fascinerende nettbutikk. Du kan klikke på de der M&M's som kommer rett til PayPal, så du kan faktisk bestille godteri fra han. Engelsk godteri. Men det mange ikke vet at denne Ribskog Norges beste blogger, og muligens også Norges beste forfatter. Altså han legger ut, han skriver 100 sider hver dag.
i et projekt som kan ligne på Karl Ove Knausgård sitt Min Kamp-projekt. For at han, og det tydelig inspirert av, heter Min Bok. Og det veldig interessant. Det veldig
And name that TV show, I guess. That was A Minute of Sound from Oslo. So that's just about all we have time for this week on Culture. Next week, we'll be devoting a show entirely to the theme of curators. You've been listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. My producer was Katie Bilboa, helped enthusiastically along the way by Hannah Jenkins, Dawn Trump and James Bacon. Time for one final song this week from their Midori House session. This is Hello Darling with Neil Armstrong. Thanks for tuning in.
Heard you say they didn't put a man on the moon. We just needed someone to prove all this floating's worth doing. Then why did you say that you miss a simpler time? Well, so do I, and I find myself pining. Question be asked when the hero comes in last, who is winning?